G'day, Novocastrians. Welcome to the Jetstream on Football Nation Radio via your podcast app or on our website, newcastlefootball.net. I'm Ferns. We're going to be talking the Jets' first home game, round three versus Adelaide. And it's a loss, but we'll get to that in a minute. And we're also going to preview next week, Friday, sees us travelling down to Sydney to take on Sydney FC. But before we get to that, we'll introduce the people talking along with me. First up, it's g'day to Dave. G'day, Dave.
Hello, mate. How you doing?
Good. Doing well. And g'day to Andy. How are you going?
Great, fans. It's good to be here with both of you guys. Feel like I'm the newbie on the well-experienced team, so here we go.
Don't worry. We'll be right. Performances will not reflect that. Will not reflect that state of play. We'll get into the opening question first. Dave, what's your favorite? What's your go-to non-football podcast? We're all listening to a lot of football podcasts across the board. But if you're trying to get away from some football content, what are you listening to?
Well, first of all, I don't know why you'd go away from any football-related content, first of all. But if you do choose to bring in variety outside of football, because, look, you can have variety in football by listening to Premier League podcasts and Italian Football League podcasts and general European League football podcasts. But I listen to Download This Show. It's an ABC podcast that's about technology and the trends that are going on in that space during the previous week. They talk, they bag Facebook, so that's pretty awesome. And they, but in general, they look at trends in media and digital technology each week. And it's a 30-minute episode. It's a good listen, very easy listen, a bit of humor as well. I quite like it.
Beautiful. All right. What about you, Andy?
So I have the joy of having about an hour commute to work, and for a solid 55 minutes of that, I don't have any phone reception. So I'm usually going between podcasts, but one I've sort of found randomly at the moment that came up as a you may be into this is Adam Peacock does a Peacock Politics podcast where he is sort of dissecting all the stuff that happened from the election. And I'm guessing my phone's made the connection through the whole Fox Sports podcast and then just said, here, this is the same guy, and been really weirdly enjoying it because it's weird to have him talk about something like that. Like, you wouldn't think he was that educated. So
I thought you were going to say then, instead of saying I'm going between podcasts, I thought you were going to say I'm going between somewhere like, I don't know, Katara and Mayfield, something like that. And
traffic's not that bad. Traffic's not that bad. Come on. I've lived in Sydney. It's not. There's no way it's as bad. Driving trucks for 12 hours a day tends to give me a lot of spare time on my own. So I'm punching through the football podcast, as it were. But I do go through quite a number of different ones. The one I really like is Fat Man Beyond, which is the Kevin Smith podcast, which used to be called Fat Man or Batman, where he used to discuss all things related to Batman, really. But then it sort of morphed over the years into a general sort of pop culture movies type podcast, which is really fun. Kevin Smith and Mark Bernardin both do a really good job. It's a live record of an event that they do every couple of weeks in Los Angeles. They get people along and it's really good. They talk over all the comic book type stuff, movies happening and sci-fi movies happening and various sort of movies that might be sort of pop culture and people who like Kevin Smith type stuff are really interested in. So they generally talk about that sort of thing. I find that quite a funny listen. I quite like Kevin Smith. I've been absorbing his stuff for years. The other one that's sort of just popped up in the last couple of weeks, actually, is a podcast that Double J's been putting out, charting the rise and fall of the Big Day Out. And they've got little snippets. They go for about 20, 25 minutes. They've got little snippets of interviews from bands and just basically how the whole thing started, interviewing the promoters and how they got Nirvana like 5 seconds before they absolutely hit big, and that was a big coincidence and was a big reason why the first big day out all the way back in the early 90s sold out on its first edition and just went from strength to strength and then moving on through the various iterations and stuff. So that's been sort of music is sort of my bag, as it were. That's what I've been listening to lately. So if you haven't found that yet, definitely do search your podcast app for the Double J Big Day Out series. I think they're up to they're almost about to release, I think, episode 4. But yeah, if you're from my era or listen to Triple J over the years, that's probably something you might enjoy. Most definitely. All right, so we might have to finally talk about a first home game, round three, as it were. Adelaide coming to Newcastle, and off the back of an FFA Cup win. Dave, how did you? I wasn't confident. I thought we could at least get a draw out of this game and maybe win, depending on obviously how hard Adelaide celebrated 3 days beforehand, winning their was it their third FFA Cup? I think it was.
I think so.
Yeah. We were hoping that that would most definitely go in our favour, but it unfortunately by full time it wasn't.
No, mate, it wasn't. I mean, we've been in this situation before. It was under Phil Stubbins when Adelaide won their... We were being coached by Phil Stubbins and Adelaide won their first FFA Cup and they came to us and we beat them 2-1, which was the game before the very infamous matchup return leg.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
The 7-0
You had thumping. To mention it. You mentioned it. I said, don't mention it. You mentioned it.
Sorry, mate. Honestly, yeah, look, I was hopeful. There were signs last week that we were – look, it was our first hit out, so I took that with a grain of salt. Mm. But there were some signs there that we actually might trouble some teams this year, and we came out the blocks really quick. And if it weren't for some unfortunate just being that little bit off the pace or some good saves from some good keeping, I should say, from Paul Izzo, we could have actually gone into the break more than the 1-0 up, but I was confident heading into the match that we could get something out of it at the very least.
Now, stupidly, I went to Dave first with a question not about stats. So before I asked Dave about the stats about this game, Andy, what were you thinking about our chances in this game? Were you confident before I did hear the podcast you and Dr. M did last week? And I thought that, yeah, we were hoping that we would come away with a good performance and result in this game, but it just didn't quite work out that way, unfortunately.
Yeah, look, I thought it was going to be one of those games where it would end up being, you know, I was thinking of sort of back to, I think it was against Adelaide where Morten Nordstrand scored late and stadium erupted sort of thing, where it would be close and then they'd just fatigue and set in and someone would get a goal late on. So I was expecting that sort of thing and I guess happened the opposite way. So, yeah, it was definitely a game that I was expecting more from and thought in the first half we did really well, but then just sort of once it started going against us, they couldn't handle it by the looks of things.
Now time to seamlessly segue to Stats Daddy Dave with his stats for this game. What have you got for us, mate?
Well, the Jets lost. So
that's the only stat that matters, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, we were 2-1 down. It was actually the first occasion that the Jets have gone into halftime ahead and ended up losing since Phil Stubbins' era, funnily enough. That's two warnings I've got so far for mentioning his name. But no, sorry, Mark Jones. I should say Mark Jones's time with the Jets. We're in round 22. We were ahead to the Brisbane Roar at halftime and ended up losing 3-1 on that occasion. So it's been quite a fair while. It's the first of Ernie Merrick's tenure that we've suffered defeat while going in to the lead at halftime. So crowd of 8,999 and one yellow card to the Jets and a total of four yellow cards to Adelaide United. So yeah. Not much really to report, Ferns.
What were you thinking about the crowd? It was obviously a fairly warm day, and the wind was howling. It was unfortunately, not a. It was an okay time to actually have the game. Five o'clock on a Saturday is not too bad a time, but unfortunately, it's nearly 9,000. I was sort of hoping for maybe a couple of thousand more. I was hoping for maybe 11,500 would have been nice, but it doesn't really seem. It seems to be more of a slow burn when it comes to the Jets rather than starting off with these great crowds.
Yeah, I think you're right, and the club will be disappointed with the crowd figure, no doubt. I mean, we can make a lot of excuses, but I don't think. It was a very windy day, but I'd hope that that's not the reason. No doubt, a Central Coast Mariners a win over the Mariners in the F3 Derby would have certainly added to that crowd. Adelaide United coming off, they're a good team, but 8,800 let's call it 8,900. It's a crowd that they wouldn't have been happy with.
Yep, definitely. Well, look, Andy, looking over the first half, it definitely seemed like we had the better chances, and I think there was probably only maybe two less than you could count on one hand chances for Adelaide. It was mostly Jets. And it started from inside of 20 seconds when there was a ball flashed across the front, and both Arroyo and Hoffman tried to get to it, but were unable to convert. We were hoping that was going to be a precursor of some good times in front of goals, but it seemed to be a precursor of many scoring chances, but being unable to convert them.
Yeah, see, I remember seeing that first chance in the first 20 seconds and being like, oh, here we go again. But it definitely turned into a thing where, once again, I think if it was anyone but Paul Izzo who seems to just have this way to lift against us, we probably would have been, two or three ahead by the break. So, yeah, definitely a game that we came out wanting to put a result on early, and things just didn't seem to go our way for the actual finishing side of it.
Do you see much of a difference, Dave, from this, like just taking this game in isolation, to the issues we had last season with scoring goals? Ernie was quite at pains to mention when we spoke to him that we had the highest stats in the league about chances at goal, but the lowest conversion rate when it came to actually putting them in the back of the net. Do you see it as the same old problem, or do you think that maybe we've got a couple of new problems? It's mainly due to Hoffman wasn't available in the striker position last season. We were mainly using other players there, but they weren't having as much joy. It's going to be Hoffman and Arroyo and Fitzgerald just have to get a couple of games to get their eye in, and then maybe these chances will start going in. Do you see much of repeating of last season's issues in front of goal, or do you have hope that this is not going to be deja vu for two seasons in a row?
I think last year we were actually struggling to create a few chances, Ferns, and we didn't have the pace nor a bit of trickery out wide. Certainly with Darryl Champness' injury, that took his X factor, for want of a cliche, out of the team. Because we were struggling to create the chances, we were shooting from long range, and a lot of those our attempts on goal, and I say on goal, not necessarily on target, were coming through Demi Petridos. I'm looking at the chances that we've had this year, and I don't, the fact that we're creating them, for me, is something that I'm seeing as a positive, and I'm looking to, and I'm actually reading into that the team are. It's better to be creating the chances than not. The fact that we're not putting them away is something I think that we can continue to improve and work on in training. And I think that in time that will come as the team continue. Because look, as a front four, and I'm calling that Petrados, Hoffman, Arroyo, and Fitzgerald, that's a 50% new team. And I mean, Hoffy was out for half, well, the best part of a third of the season anyway. So I'm not losing sleep over it, if that's what you're, if that helps you in any way.
No, well, that certainly answers the question, I think. Andy, looking at the starting lineup, we had the same lineup that we had versus the Coast, despite Johnny Katrumbas didn't really have a great game in the derby, but I thought that he actually did have a much better game this game, was getting down the wing and was becoming much more involved. Miller was quite lively on the other side as well, especially in that first half, obviously. But were you surprised that maybe we didn't see a couple more, we didn't see Ernie maybe shuffling the pack around a little bit to see if he could change things a little bit, or you think that it was pretty much he was going to go with that starting 11 and then look to bring people off the bench to change things later?
I think he was always, Ernie doesn't seem to want to really change things. He tries to keep things the same for as long as he can, and even with subs and stuff like that, he seems to really wait until people are either completely gassed or, you know, it's clear what the result's going to be. On Katrumbas, I think he definitely, you know, had that, like, it's got to hurt to get pulled at halftime in a game like that when you're a professional footballer. So that would have given him the motivation to come back, and I think he definitely sent that message. The player that disappointed me a little bit in this game was Stephen Ugarkovic. I thought he had probably one of his worst games, and that was probably underlined by the fact that, from memory, he did actually come off in the...
Yep. Yeah, he and Fitzgerald both got subbed in the 68th minute.
Yeah, so for him to come off like that, which is fairly early for a sub for Ernie, I think just shows how ineffective he was being for that game, which is very rare. He usually has that ability to at least be out there and creating chances, and you're questioning why Rydenton's there, but they kind of swapped over a little bit, as much as it pains me to say that.
Yeah, well, obviously, Dave, we're very much in love with the whole concept of Stevie UG as a player and as a person on this podcast. But yeah, you can't expect a player to be at 100% all the time. Every player is going to have an off game or two. Do you think that was just one of Stevie's poor performance for the season, and then he'll be back to normal next week, or are you seeing maybe the way we're playing isn't really bringing the best out of Stevie?
Look, I've got every faith in my man Stevie UG, I thought he had quite a reasonable first half. He was afforded a lot of space in that first half. Both he and Rydenton, they essentially sat on McGree and Troisi, and Adelaide were playing just the one holding midfielder in Dorigo, and that really created a lot of space for Petrados and at least one of the Jets' holding midfielders to push forward. When it was Ugarkovic moving forward, I was actually more impressed. I think he had a greater output than he did against Rydenton, and I wonder whether... Because I see Ugarkovic and Rydenton as very similar players in terms of wanting to get forward as their primary focus, that they're very box to box there, and the defensive side of their game is probably not as strong as their attacking side, that either of those players is complemented better by Cantor. And I wonder whether that the similarity between Ugarkovic and Rydenton actually contributed to him having a poor game, because, I mean, many people were saying last week Rydenton had quite a poor game as well. So I wonder whether there's anything in that.
Well, there seems to be Rydenton, Andy, seems to be a bit of a whipping boy lately, but it just seems everybody's fairly negative on the guy. But he did have a fairly good game in this one. But with Stevie going off and Kantorovsky coming on, Did you see the midfield improve a little when that switch happened, or do you think maybe it would have been better to take Rydenton off and run with our first choice central defensive midfield partnership of Ugarkovic and Kantorovsky?
Yeah, I guess it was just so out of character, for lack of better words, for Stevie to have such a poor game. So I think Ernie has just made the decision that if you're going to give Canner a run, why not give him the run with the partner that seems to be doing better on the day? I look at Stevie, and one of the big things that I've noticed in his game is that he seems very reluctant to shoot. There seems to be a lot of opportunities where you even can hear the crowd through the TV if you're watching it, that they're sort of encouraging him to just have a hit at it from that sort of bit out of the box range, and just seems to be reluctant. And then you've got Rod Denton, who almost seems to be taking on, you know, this might be killing the guy, but taking on that Andrew Hull type vibe of, you know, run, and then not be able to do anything when you're like, oh shit, I better shoot. So yeah, I think it was for that game, it was best that Rod Denton kept his spot for the rest of the game, and they bring on Canner to just sort of solid things up. But yeah, I would definitely like to see that in, whether it's this week or future weeks, if Canner doesn't start, then at least he comes on with the intention to partner Stevie as he has done so well in previous seasons.
Look, Stevie some credit, though, he is an Arsenal fan, so you know, trying to pass the ball onto the back of the net just comes to second nature. But I do wonder if he was substituted, if our game was, say, a Sunday, or he, later, whether he would have walked off, stripped his shirt off, cupped his ears and thrown his shirt on the ground and stormed off down the tunnel. But we'll never know.
Yeah, we'll never know, and he wouldn't have got that reaction anyway. So that was never going to happen. Well, we have talked about the creation of chances and all that jazz earlier on, but we should actually talk about the goal we did actually score. Andy Arroyo put the ball in the back of the net on the 37th minute off a corner. There was some good lead up play to actually get the corner. It was a chance of goal that the aforementioned Izzo had a blinder and tipped it over. I think it was Hoffey or Fitzgerald, one of the two wide players, I think, had a shot and he tipped it over, which gave us the corner, and then the ball got Arroyo got the knockdown and spun around. It was quite a nice little finish, actually. Sorry, it wasn't a header. It was a nice little half volley on the turn in the penalty box. It was a nice little striker's instinct, and that sort of, I mean, we obviously did see some of that from O'Donovan in his time when he was actually available, but it's good that we found a player that's actually got that ability to be quick to the ball and make a snap decision that's going to work out in our favour rather than sending it over the crossbar and over the back of the scoreboard at the back of the ground.
Yeah, and what a throw from, I think it was Matty Miller that launched it in, like, to be able to go from the sideline to pretty much on the, you know, penalty spot in one throw is a pretty good effort. Mm. But, yeah, just the composure from Arroyo to take it on the chest and turn and just have a hit was, yeah, refreshing to see, and hopefully it becomes – I feel Arroyo, I could be wrong, but maybe needs to play more in sort of the traditional, like a 4-4-2 or some – variation of a two playing off someone. He seems to be more that, like, almost poacher-esque player that can just sort of be in the right position for the shot when it comes. And so it'll be interesting to see how he backs up this week and if he can continue to get on the scoreboard, because it'll be great to have a player that can actually, you know, get into double-figure goals for the season.
Now, Doug, I was going to say, it's a really good point you raised there, Andy, that Arroyo looks really good in a front two. If you think back to the game against Edgeworth, granted that, yes, it's an NPL team that we're playing, but still we played with Fitzgerald off Arroyo there with a more of a 4-2-2-2 style formation, I felt, and we achieved a fair bit of success in that match. We had Fitzgerald being the busy running player. We had Arroyo being the presence in the box and the one that was looking to get on the end of crosses, cutbacks, etc. And with Dimi and Wes Houlihan pulling the strings in behind. And I think you've picked up something there, but I'd be I'd be interested to see whether Ernie looks to go back to something like that. And if he, again, Sydney, and jump, this is probably jumping ahead, and if he does, mate, who that player could be to fill that Houlihan role, for me, it'd be Ugarkovic.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. Andy, we did, I don't know if it's been mentioned on the podcast, but I know in private discussions or discussions on discussions on social media I was having after that Derby game where people were sort of ragging on Arroyo a little bit, I sort of made the point that we were playing him wrong. In that Derby game, we were lobbing high balls up to him and expecting him to chest them down, or you know, it was all to his head or to his chest to try and get knockdowns and bring other players on. When I sort of said that he, from what we've been told, he's better on the turn, getting onto balls over the top of the defense and balls through the defense so that he can run onto them and beat them with pace. Did you see much more evidence of that in this game, or was it sort of a mix of the two?
A big problem for him now is that he's scored that, what is a fairly decent goal. I think people are going to expect that all the time from him. And, you know, I think it's definitely more of a, you know, keeping the ball down and almost having him there for those opportunities when they come for the loose ball and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, maybe the occasional, but that goal on the weekend come from the fact that he was actually allowed to have a bit of space. So I don't think Adelaide were expecting that ball to come so deep off a throw that he would just be able to get it in turn. And so therefore you've got to look at, you know, the way that he is best deployed. And I think with what Dave said about looking at how the team was set up from the Edgeworth game, you had players such as Wes Houlihan that can, you know, run the ball a bit more and sort of be that attacking player and be able to feed it through in a position for really Arroyo to play as a, you know, out-and-out striker type deal. So I think that's the, it's just going to be about getting that connection of who can best feed through to him and who, I guess, isn't selfish enough to just hang on to it themselves and create opportunity themselves, but actually pass off. And there seems to be that partnership going between him and Hoffman, but they just need to sort of work out between them when it's better to release, because I think there was an opportunity early on where if the ball had come across, Hoffman pretty much would have had a tap in. So
Yeah, he took it himself. He took it himself rather than passing it out wide. I think that was in the first five or six minutes.
Yep. Yeah, very early on.
Yep. Dave, looking at some of the other players on the pitch, who do you think had a good game?
I think Matt Miller's actually quite a good signing, mate. He offers a lot going down that right-hand side and is a constant threat that defenders and wingers of opposition teams are going to have to track. He allows Hoffy to push more centrally and get in the box, which we all know from listening to Ernie that that's his ambition. That's the outcome that he wants from the team. So I thought it actually, Johnny didn't have too bad of at least a first half, better than the match against the Mariners. Hopefully it's, I'd still personally prefer to see Bobby Burns there, but hopefully yep. for Johnny, this is an opportunity that he continues to learn in that position and grows as he matures across that back line. So, yeah, Matt Miller for me, and with a bit of an honourable mention to Johnny Katrumbas.
Andy, what about you? Anyone else to add to that list?
Just to sort of echo that, I like what is sort of happening with Miller and Katrumbas almost playing that sort of wing back, getting up the line and running the ball forward. It's really positive. I think one player that I'm waiting to see, and I was fairly critical of when we signed him, was Fitzgerald. I think after seeing him more and more, it's just going to be that confidence once he gets a few away. He sort of, to me, appears like he ends up in a stage fright almost, that he gets in a goal-scoring opportunity and is just like, oh, what do I do? And ends up kicking it straight at the keeper or whatnot. So he's creating chances. He just needs to be able to finish them off. So I think Fitzgerald is definitely, he showed signs over the last two rounds and seems to be getting stronger as he gets more confidence.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. I definitely thought that Fitzgerald has, not having many expectations on him when we signed him, I thought in the last two games, yeah, he's actually looked quite good on that wing position. And I'm hoping that he's on an upward trajectory rather than going to plateau at any point, which obviously he has done in at previous clubs. But like I said, I think in the preview, he's never really got a chance at many of these other clubs a consistent basis. So he's going to be the first choice player in that position with Hoffey on the other side. So it's definitely going to be good to fingers crossed, it's going to be good to see what happens with him as time goes on. We do have to talk about the goals in the second half, unfortunately. Riley McGree scored two. Did you want to cover off the first one, Dave, at the 49th minute? Left in space in the 18 yard box, and no one going out to close him down, and he ended up getting the ricochet and putting the ball in the back of the net.
I'm actually putting the blame for this one on Redenton, mm-hmm. because the ball comes in and he's quite weak in the block and the shield. I felt and allowed. I think it was Toriak, but I'm happy to be corrected if I'm wrong. The ability to stop, turn, and chip a ball, a dinker ball, I should say, back to the penalty spot. And that's where McGree was. He was unmarked. And we've got to stop that ball actually getting into him first before, maybe it was Troisi. I think it was Troisi, actually. Anyway, we've got to stop the ball getting into him. There's a player. But we've got to stop that ball, the ball before the goal. And yeah. In this case, it was what I thought was some quite weak defending on behalf of Redenton, that he should have been doing better to shut that down and nullify any opportunity that Adelaide had, because the guy's against the byline. It's quite, and the ball was rolling away from him. It wasn't like he had any pace behind the ball, that he was running at speed. He was trapped in, but he managed to get it out. And that's the sort of thing if we want to be serious, that's the thing we've got to start shutting down.
Yep, definitely. Now the second goal, Andy, I'll let you cover off, was in the 61st minute. A corner from Riley McGree that unfortunately snuck past everybody, including our goalkeeper, and went into the back of the net. I think I saw a joke circulating after that match that Glenn Moss had played for Wellington for something like 100 games, but ended up being beaten by the Wind in Newcastle. But but that was a bit disappointing. We would be hoping that a goalkeeper wouldn't be getting beaten from a corner.
Oh, especially someone of his experience that, all jokes aside, yeah, plays in or spent majority of his career at a place where it's fairly windy and horrendous conditions. So I think once again, just they didn't, as a whole, the team didn't defend that corner well. And with the first goal, I feel that we need to look at what teams did last season when Dimmy was pretty much marked out of the game all the time and could never really get time on the ball to do anything. And that's the approach that you need to take with players like Riley McGree. You know, he's got that ability to break away and get a shot off when you wouldn't even expect it. So we need to look at how do we nullify those players without sort of taking too much away from an attacking point, but definitely be able to defend fairly straightforward situations. And that corner just seemed to be everyone was napping and the Wind happened to catch the ball in the right way and it went in. But because Riley McGree scored one wonder goal in his life, it was all of a sudden the best thing ever. So not bitter at all.
Yeah. No, we're not. Dave, looking at the match overall, it seemed to be a game where we started well and sort of tailed off, whereas Adelaide seemed to grow into the game. They sort of started off fairly timidly. Maybe they did have a bit of a hangover from the, as it were, from the FFA Cup victory, but they definitely grew into the game. And second half, made it count. We were unfortunately unable to get back on the scoreboard after that. Did you see that the final sort of stages of the match where that we had the chances to win it, or do you think that the performance didn't really warrant us getting back to level or even coming through with another two goals to take the game?
Don't think we were probably good for a win, but I would have felt that a draw would have been okay. We certainly had our opportunities. Bugard was in there with a couple of with a couple of headers from a corner that were defended well enough. I mean, we had the goal also ruled out by VAR, Bredenton's goal, and rightly so.
I was going to ask about that, but you've covered that. That's good.
Yeah, look, that one you can't argue with. But
I really hate the new handball rule. It seems to be that it doesn't really matter whether it's intentional. Intentional seems to be taken out of it now. It just basically seems to be if there's any contact below the shoulder, it's a handball, and it's automatically ruled out. Is that the way it seems to you?
Oh, it's VAR,
even
mate.
In the Premier League,
mate,
even in the Premier League,
mate. It's VAR. How do you explain it? But look, Adelaide made the tactical change at halftime, and they hooked Ryan Kiddo, they hooked Christian Opseth, who really did nothing in the first 45, and they brought on Maria and Mile Uznic down that left hand side, and that just changed the game for them. So I think a draw would have been warranted. Glenn Moss needed to do better with that goal, but I think we were worthy of point.
What about you, Andy? Did you see it similar?
Yeah, with Mile Uznic coming in, he seemed to be able to shut Matt Miller down a lot quicker. Miller didn't seem to have anywhere near the opportunities that he was having in the second half or later second half compared to the first. Glenn Moss is an interesting one because I don't necessarily feel like we gain much by having Lewis Italiano take over from him again. I by no means expect that it'll change. I think we would have to lose probably three or four before Ernie would look at changing goalkeepers, but there definitely has to be, you know, and it's the thing that they drill into you that, you know, there's 9-10 other players before it gets to the goalkeeper, so therefore it shouldn't always be on them. But, yeah, just some fairly basic mistakes that keep leading to us ending up in the same situation. So it's definitely frustrating. It'd be interesting to see if any changes are made in the next few weeks to sort of combat that.
Yep, definitely. All right. Well, we probably talked about as much as we can, rather apart from the man of the match voting that took place after the game. Dave, what was the final wash up in that?
The 3-2-1 for the Jetstream's Player of the Year award. A unanimous win by Matt Miller with 33% of the vote. Second place, Nigel Bugard earns 2 points with 14% of the vote, and Nikolai Topol-Stanley just behind him on 12.5%. So they are the three players of the match.
Beautiful. And I would see, I'm seeing a couple of across the different Jets supporters' social media channels promoting a player of the match. Is that is it all the same one, or is everybody doing a different one?
Yeah.
You don't know?
I have no idea, mate.
I've seen a couple of people promoting
not on Facebook, so
Survey Monkey. Yeah.
Hey, best way to have a go. Look, I'd probably just check the links and see if that's the same.
So
if we're getting quite a few votes, so it could well be.
Yep. Okay. No worries. Well, how many votes are we getting, Dave?
Lots.
Lots. That's great to hear. All right, no problem. So that was your 3-2-1. If you do want to vote for each match, we put up a link after each game on the Jetstream socials, obviously Facebook, Twitter, and does Em put them up on? I'm pretty sure she puts them up on Instagram as well.
Yeah, I think so, mate. It takes 20 seconds, if that, to log in and vote. So if you've got an interest, we get them up generally within a couple of hours after the game. So it's there and we leave them open until we hold this pod, at which point we close them and it's done. So all competitive games that the Jets are playing this season add to that that tally. So the FFA Cup games are included.
Yep.
Andy?
I was just going to say, hopefully Bugard keeps actually performing and, you know, talking pre-season, it was very, this is going to be his last season, expecting him to, I think there was even talk of, you know, early retirement, that he wouldn't even make the season. He's gone back to being one of our best defenders and best overall players. So let's hope he can keep that up.
Yep, absolutely. All right, well, we will now get into talking, previewing the game against Sydney FC, which is happening this Friday night. This one's at Leichhardt Oval, Dave. Unfortunately, I'll be working, so I won't be making the trip down. 7:30 p.m. kickoff down there in Sydney. Either of you guys going to the game, Dave?
Sorry, mate, I was just on mute. No, mate, I'm
You're
not.
Mute.
No, yeah, no, I'm not heading down.
What about you, Andy?
I would like to, but considering I finish work at 6 p.m., it might be a bit of a stretch to get down there.
Unless you've got a really fast car, that's not going to happen. Yeah, having been to one game against Sydney FC in pre-season down at Leichhardt Oval, that's going to look a treat for Friday night football. That's going to be great. Unfortunately, I won't be able to watch it live. I'll have to listen to it on the radio. Dave, give us some stats for this game. Being Sydney FC and knowing how we've gone against them in previous seasons, I'm expecting this not to be a great segment.
Oh, look, no. And we are interested, by the way, if people do follow the Jetstream on the various social media channels, you'll notice that we are putting out a new look match preview every week. That's coming out on a Thursday. So we're interested in your feedback on how you're finding that, if there's other information that I may have that you would like to see. But overall fixtures for this match, there have been 44 competitive fixtures between this team. 44 of those in the A-League and none in the FFA Cup. The Jets have 8 wins, Sydney FC have 26 wins. There's been 10 draws. In Sydney, there's been 22 matches where we've had 3 wins, Sydney 14 and 5 draws. Goals in the fixture, 43 Jets, 68 Sydney. In Sydney, 21 to 36. If we look at the last result, though, that was round 27 last season at McDonald Jones Stadium. The Jets came out 2-0 winners with goals to Ben Kanarovsky and Dimi Petratos. The biggest wins in this fixture, the Jets had a 5-2 win round 7 down in 2011 and 12 at the SFS. Our heaviest defeat is a 4-0 defeat back in season 2008 and 09. Leading scorers in this fixture, there are 5 players with 3 goals from the Jets. That is, here's some names, blast from the past. Are you ready for this, guys? Milton Rodriguez, Ryan Griffiths, Jeremy Brockie, Michael Bridges and Joe Wheelhouse all have 3 goals against Sydney FC. Sydney FC's leading scorer in this fixture is Alex Brosk with 12. Ernie Merrick has a 33% win ratio during his time as Jets coach against Sydney FC. Steve Corica also has the same win ratio during his time as Sydney FC coach.
So third place Sydney FC plays 9th place Newcastle Jets. Obviously, Andy, those stats don't make much, don't look great. Although the interesting one is obviously going to be Sydney FC losing their last game against Wanderers in the derby at Bankwest Stadium. How much and what sort of effect do you think that'll have on the game?
I think they'll definitely want to try and bounce back and get up from that. But just looking through their results from round one, so 3-2 win over Adelaide United, 2-1 win over Wellington, and then the 1-0 loss. It seems to be a case of they're not, maybe there's something that's not quite clicking yet. They seem to be able to definitely be scored against. I'm not sure if it's that fact that there's a few sort of key partnerships that have been broken up, like they haven't got Brillante anymore and a few other players that have moved on. So, yeah, I think it's definitely doable, but we would have to put in a 95-minute performance. And at this point, it just doesn't seem like that's possible.
I'd say, if I was a cynic, I'd say they're probably owed a VAR result, a VAR decision. So we've probably got that coming up against us. But yeah, look, it's and I will correct myself as well. Dimi Petratos has also scored 3 goals against Sydney FC, so added to that list of 5 players as well.
All right. Well, looking at the we haven't actually had a chance to speak to a Sydney FC fan to talk about their season yet, but hopefully that will be in the next couple of weeks. But looking at their outs, Dave, Alex Brosk retired, Sim De Jong sort of after 3 weeks disappeared and then's never to be seen again. Gu Chanahad. That's how I'm going to go with that. Anthony Caceres, Daniel De Silva went back to the Central Coast. Calver went to Western United. Brilliante went to Melbourne City. Van der Linden, Sisak, Austin, Tratt, Devlin went. Barbarousis, Bam Johan, Ryan McGowan, Anthony Caceres, Luke Bratton, Zuvella and Flotman. I'm assuming those guys are promotions from their youth side. All in all, they've sort of got rid of players that didn't really do much for them, and they've brought in a couple of really good players, Bamyohan, Barbarousis, Caceres, and Bratton are sort of the main ones in that group. They've not weakened themselves. They do seem to be stronger than they were last season, but it's obviously going to be down to how quickly those players can gel together.
Absolutely, and to note your comment there on CM De Jong, where he went. I saw him, I've recently got back from holiday in Fiji, and they had the highlight show for the UEFA Champions League, and he was coming on for Ajax in the Champions League during midweek. So that's where he went, mate.
Failed up.
Yep. Yep.
Hey.
He what? Definitely failed up on that one.
Yeah.
I love it. Look, I think that they've actually increased the quality of their squad with the additions that they've made. Every team in the A-League would love to have Costa Barbarousis. He's a goal-scoring winger, tricky as well. Bamyohan and Ninkovic in the same team, creativity just oozing from that squad. And I haven't seen the Derby, but the match that they played the previous week, I think it was the round one clash against Adelaide. They looked really, really dangerous in the way they were attacking. And we will have our work cut out for us in the centre of the park. And I think that we're actually going to see some changes given the attacking and creative options that Sydney have.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably a good bet. Andy, what do you think those changes are going to be, or what changes would you be making?
For us or for them?
Yes, for us.
We've talked
about them enough. There's only so much of that I can put up with. So yeah, we need to talk about us. What changes do we need to make so we can get something out of this game?
I think definitely be looking at what role Kanarovsky plays in the game. Does he start? Does he maybe come on at about the 50-60 minute mark and just build sort of his match fitness up again? I'd be interested to see if Bobby Burns gets a chance. I think he showed promise when he came on and would be that kind of player that would only go strength to strength if he actually gets some game time. I don't think Ernie is going to necessarily drop anyone. I'd say we'll probably see the same team, and if we get it absolutely handed to us, that then maybe they'll come out with the week's worth of we're going to make sweeping changes and it's one player that sits out or something like that. So I think we'll see the same team we did, and hopefully just maybe change a bit of it around with the bench. Maybe Gus gets brought on a bit earlier. Yeah, I'd say it would be very similar to what we saw last week.
Dave?
Yeah, I don't think we'll see many changes. Kantorowski would probably be the only one, and Redenton would have been the player that I would have been swapping out. But I think that Ugarkovic actually will be that player given his early hook against Adelaide United, and that in the Herald there's an article about in-form Matt Redenton. So I'm not expecting that there's going to be a massive change there. But The matchup though that I'm really keen to see, and I think where we'll actually get a bit of joy, is Matt Miller versus Milos Ninkovic. Ninkovic is certainly not a player known for his he works hard, but I think that he's going to actually have a really torrid time against Matt Miller. That game that I watched, he had a really tough time against Ryan Strain for Adelaide, and Strain was afforded a lot of space, and it was down that right-hand side Adelaide were able to create their chances and really hurt Sydney. And I think that we're going to look to exploit similar opportunity, given that Zulo will be there, young King, who was there for Sydney FC on that night. But I think that that's where the Jets are going to be able to get a little bit of have an impact, I should say, on Sydney FC.
Burns? Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No problem. I was just waiting to see whether you'd finished. I would like to see us maybe look at bringing in Burns to see what he could do against some really good opposition. I thought he did really well when he came on in the derby, and I was disappointed not to see him play against Adelaide. So against a team of Sydney's stature, I would like to see him brought in and just to see what he can do. So personally, if Kantorovsky's not fit to start, I would actually like to see Burns brought on. We'd still drop either one of Rodenton and Yugarkovic and play Kotrumbis in the middle of the park now next to whoever. So that gives us somebody who's a little bit more mobile, because Johnny's very active in that role, I think, in the middle of the park. So it would be interesting to see him. I don't think we're going to see it, but it would be definitely interesting to see that happen. I'm similar to Andy. I think it's going to be pretty similar. It's going to be a pretty similar lineup to what we've seen, and maybe one change. There's not really any other. Short of someone getting injured during the week with training, I don't really think we're going to see much of a difference there. We probably can't really talk too much about it without the squads and all the other relative information not being released until Thursday. So, Andy, what do you think the score's going to be?
I think we'll play out a 2-2 draw, and I really like the idea of starting Kotrumbis at left back and then maybe bring on Bobby Burns in the second half, and maybe even look at push Kotrumbis up into that midfield role, because he seems to have the energy to run for majority of the game. So that could be a positive thing for our 2-2 draw that I'm predicting.
Dave?
I'm going to predict an against the run of play 2-1. I'd actually probably make a slight change and go back to the formation that we put out against Edgeworth with that 4-2-2-2 that I mentioned. I'd be putting Nugarkovic up top with Dimi as those two players, with ahead of Fitzgerald and Arroyo. I'd be moving Hoffie back to right back and dropping Johnny and putting Cantor in next to Rodenton. So that would be the formation I'd be starting, looking to exploit Sydney to put someone very energetic up against Ryan Grant, holding the middle of the park where Sydney are dangerous against Baumjohan, two players in there, while looking to give some width and room down that right-hand side with Matt Miller. So I'm predicting a 2-1 win.
I'm also going to be bullish and predict a 2-1 win as well. I don't know if it's going to happen, but hey, we'll see. I'm really hoping that we can get a first win of the season up on the board, and no better place to do it than away to Sydney FC, because they're going to hate that. We'll quickly cover off the rest of round 4 before we wrap things up. Dave, Saturday the 2nd of November, 5 p.m. kickoff, the early kickoff coming to us from Bankwest Stadium. Wanderers taking on Brisbane. Brisbane down just one place below us on the table in 10th. They really need a win here. Western Sydney flying high at the top of the table. Do you see this being a boil over, or do you think it's going to be a Wanderers win?
A Wanderers win, mate. 3-1.
I'm picking 2-0. Andy?
I'm going to go with the Bodie special of 4-0 to the Wanderers.
The game that's obviously 5 p.m. is on Saturday is the game that's going to be on ABC. So that will be good to see that another full or three quarters full Bankwest Stadium on the public broadcaster. The second game on Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. kickoff, is another Melbourne derby. This one is Melbourne Victory versus Western United. Andy, what do you think is going to happen here? Western United actually not doing too badly at the moment. They're sitting on equal points with Melbourne Victory. Both of them are on 4 points each, but obviously Western United above them on goal difference. Do you think that Victory can get over their early season wobble and start to solidify themselves, or do you think maybe the old guard at Western United are going to be able to get another win here?
I think Berisha will stand up and get a couple, and I think they'll bring it home as 3-1 winners. I think Melbourne Victory are really going to end up regretting the decision to go with Marco Kurtz, and I don't think they'll make finals this year.
Dave, who are you picking to win the Berisha Derby?
Neither. Actually, no. I'm gonna pick Western United. I reckon Berisha will be awarded a late penalty that will be not overturned by VAR, and I'm talking like 92nd minute. He will score, and he will run, and he will celebrate. Just like anything else, 2-1.
Yeah, very hard. Sunday, the early game is Melbourne City taking on Wellington Phoenix. Wellington Phoenix mired to the bottom of the table there, Dave. Melbourne City sitting in second. I did think that Melbourne City were going to have a good season. It seems to be that they are so far. Do you think that Wellington can? They did play pretty well against Sydney FC last week, but they didn't come away with anything. Do you think that's going to be the story of their season? They're going to look good in games, but they're not going to be able to make that count on the scoreboard.
Are we talking about the Jets, or are we talking about the...
Well, we're two places above them, so come on, don't jinx us.
I'm predicting a 1-1 draw here. Jamie McLaren's hamstring injury, is going to cause a fair bit of grief for City. They have got Craig Noon, but I'm going to say a 1-1 draw here.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be a 2-0 win to City. I should actually also mention as well in the previous game that we were talking about, Melbourne Victory, Naboot's out as well, with an injury, and they're both going to be missing for the Socceroos, which is sort of sucky. But anyway, Andy, what's going to be the score in City versus Wellington?
3-1 to City.
Okay, the final game is 6 p.m., Perth Glory hosting the Mariners. Is anybody not picking a Bodie special?
No, I'm not.
4-0?
You're going to go more.
Yeah.
6-0.
6-0? Well, there we go. Dave, what about you?
Well, look, we're not quite getting to Leicester territory here, but I'm going to say a comfortable 3-0 win
for
Tony Popovich's men.
I'm going to say a 4-1 win. It's definitely going to be interesting. We've predicted some goals. It would be interesting to see where they're actually going to come off, but we'll watch with bated breath. All right, thanks very much, guys, for listening. Well, obviously, you heard at the top of the podcast, we've got a new partner for this season. We will be available to listen to on Football Nation Radio via their website or their app. We are broadcast at midday on Thursdays. You can check us out. They're also going to be playing some of the other fan podcasts on the show as well. Have a look at their website for the various times. They're across the week, as it were. I think there's about six of them all up, isn't there, Dave?
Yeah, I think so.
Yep, that's a brilliantly non-committal answer. If you're listening to us on Football Nation Radio, welcome. If you're not, thank you very much. We do love having all our subscribers joining us. You can check us out through TuneIn, through Spotify, through Stitcher, through Apple and Google Podcast, Podbean, or just put Jetstream Podcast into your podcast app. searching for us will pop up straight away. Or you can also listen to us and subscribe through all the links at newcastlefootball.net. If you want to get in contact with us, you can email us, podcast@newcastlefootball.net, or at JetStreamNewA on all the socials, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. All right, that's pretty much it. We've done the full hour. That's all we need to really discuss, I think. So thanks very much for joining us, Dave.
You're welcome, mate.
And thanks very much as well, Andy.
Absolute pleasure as always.
Thank you very much. Now, if you had any ideas or suggestions, guys, please do drop us a line via those previously mentioned links. We're always after feedback on how we can improve things. We've dropped back to one show a week to try and condense the content and get more of a consistent product out there. If you're liking what you hear so far, please let us know. Or if you can think of any other ideas to improve things, please also let us know. But until next time, go the Jets.
Go the Jets.
Go the Jets.
I haven't put my Vamosil jerk horse in this season yet. I'm going to have to do that in the next one. I keep forgetting. Oh, I'm down, Benjamin!